Support for WPR comes from Tomorrow River Community Virtual School, delivering Waldorf-inspired live virtual lessons to grades 4K through 8th, open to all Wisconsin students. More is at trcvs.org.
Support for WPR comes from the Stevens Point area, offering a variety of getaway experiences. Itineraries and ideas for beer lovers, foodies, outdoor recreation fans, and more are at StevensPointArea.com.
It's such a treat to be able to go out into the garden and pick wonderful fresh veggies. But if you're like me, you've also had the experience of going out in the garden and thinking, what in the world am I going to do with all those zucchini? Hi, I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. I'm happy to have Chef Terry Milligan with us. She's a culinary instructor and writer, as well as the former owner and executive chef of the Inn at Christopher's in Sister Bay. Terry, it's great to have you back with us.
Well, thank you, Judith. I'm happy to be back.
Well, the last time we talked with you, it was very different weather. It was just before Thanksgiving, and we were talking about wonderful side dishes. Since then, you've sold the Inn at Christopher's in Sister Bay. You sold it last winter. So what are you up to now?
Well, I have my own new website, which is chefterrymilligan.com, and it shows where I am because I'm in lots of places. I do classes up here in Door County, Wisconsin, at the Savory Spoon, which is in Ellison Bay. But I also teach a lot in the Milwaukee area at the Milwaukee Public Market. And, in fact, I'm going there tomorrow to do a class. And then in another 2 weeks, I'm going to be doing another class for them. So I do hands-on classes at the public market. Then I also do some writing, and I'm fortunate enough to have had a couple of articles in the food section, one most recently last Wednesday in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And I also write for a new magazine called Edible Door. Their second publication is going to come out actually at the end of this week, and I'm talking about farmers markets and what to do with all the produce that you have from farmers markets. So it's kind of apropos, and that's going to be available online at ediblecook.com at the end of this week. So some of the things we're talking about, they'll be able to see recipes there as well. And I did put a lot of recipes on my website so listeners could zero in on some of the things that we're going to be talking about and make it a little easier for them to find things.
Perfect. And we do have a link to your website. Again, that's Chef Terry Milligan, and Terry is T-E-R-R-I, Milligan, M-I-L-L-I-G-A-N.com. There is a link on the Facebook page and a direct link to those summer bounty recipes. How different is what you're doing now to being tied to a restaurant kitchen every day?
Well, I thought it would be a little slower, and it's gotten just as busy, but in a different way. So instead of having to cook every day for a couple hundred people, I teach more, and I work a little bit more on giving recipes out to the general public. I always did that at the restaurant on our website, and I did cooking classes at the restaurant. But now I meet a lot more people throughout the whole state in a variety of ways. So it's different, but in the way a little bit the same, because I'm still creating recipes and putting together menus for different folks.
Well, and I'm sure you have no shortage of people that are willing to be your guinea pigs for trying out those new recipes.
In fact, two weeks ago, my dachshunds were my guinea pigs because I was doing a lavender article for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and I had to test a lavender dog bone recipe 3 different times. I said they were getting kind of fat.
And did they like the dog bones?
They did. We got, so the lavender is supposed to calm down the dogs, mm-hmm. and I'm not quite sure if it worked as well as I would have liked. But they enjoyed eating them.
Well, that's good. And good that they're willing to help you out, earn their keep a little bit.
The dogs are always willing to help out with my little snacks.
Well, as we were saying, this time of year, I think more than any other point in the growing season means amazing amounts of wonderful produce, whether from our own gardens or from the farmer's market, or a lot of folks get their veggies through a CSA share, a community supported mm-hmm. agriculture share, where you get a portion of what the farm is producing. But sometimes it really can feel like too much of a good thing. And I think most of us, you know, really don't want to waste those wonderful vegetables. So let's talk about a few of those regular culprits that seem to all come ripe at once and how you like to prepare them. Of course, one of the big ones, and they're good raw, but it's also nice to cook with them, is tomatoes. What do you like to do with tomatoes, Terry?
Well, I love tomatoes, and they do come all at once, and then you are looking at what am I going to do with all of these things. One of the things that I like to do is actually oven roast the tomatoes instead of just sun-dried tomatoes. By oven roasting them and slow roasting them in a low oven, you get a tomato that's not as dry as a sun-dried tomato, has a little more chew to it, and then I put a little bit of olive oil on it, and you can keep those in your refrigerator and have them ready to go whenever you want them. I actually, on the website, if you look under, there's a tomato terrine recipe that is actually Chef Jesse Johnson up here at the waterfront. It's his recipe. And he likes to do that method, and I learned it from him, actually, when I did an article on him a couple of months ago. But the way to oven roast them is listed in that article, and it's also going to be in the Edible Door magazine at the end of the month, too. But that's really a great way to use up a lot of tomatoes, as well as, of course, making sauces and canning them for future use. But I really like doing that oven-dried tomato because you can use them in pastas and pestos. This is what he used in this tomato terrine. Really versatile.
And they have such a rich, mellow flavor when they're slow-roasted like that.
They are. And this particular recipe that Chef Jesse Johnson does is great because he also has a new creamery up here in Door County where he makes his own goat cheese. And he has 52 goats, and they're darling. Mixed with that really fresh Chev cheese and a basil pesto and then that oven-dried tomato, it's just terrific. And you can make that and spread it on crackers for a quick either lunch or just a snack.
Well, and explain for our listeners what a terrine is in case they're not familiar with that.
Well, think of a loaf pan and layers in the loaf pan. So in this particular recipe, a terrine is always something that's in a loaf pan and then usually has different layers. I've made mousse terrines with fish. This is a vegetable terrine with cheese. So in this instance, this recipe is a basil pesto followed by layers of the Chev cheese, a softer goat cheese. You could use Montrachet cheese as well if you get in the store. And then it's a sun-dried tomato. You could call it a pesto if you'd like. I put it in the food processor a little bit and pulse it. And then a little bit of an olive pesto as well. So you make a little black olive layer. So you've got a layer of black olive, the goat cheese, the basil pesto, another layer of goat cheese, and then right on top, the tomatoes. So it's got that vibrant color.
Wow.
And you just kind of press that in. What's nice is you make that ahead of time, and then you can just unmold it. And you've got this really pretty log, really, of different flavors and different colors. Very impressive to your guests.
And a good way to use that basil, which is probably going crazy
exactly.
Right about now, too.
There's the basil in there, too. And, you know, if you don't want, I always like to do more than, I always think that pesto means more than just basil.
Mm-hmm.
I've made pesto with mint and with arugula, and I've thrown sage in it. You know, any herb really can be made into a pesto. You can just do a whole mix match of whatever you really like flavor-wise.
We're talking with Chef Terry Milligan. She is a culinary instructor and writer and is sharing ideas for how to use those late summer vegetables that are all coming ripe at once. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post a question, comment, or a recipe on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. And Terry, we have Tom in Frog Point with an idea for tomatoes. So let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. I have two ideas for tomatoes. And one is that it's so energy wasteful to boil and boil your tomatoes to get it down to a salsa level where it's not so runny or heading for a tomato paste. And I boil my tomatoes up to put them in the clean jars, but I don't seal them. I let them sit out overnight. And then in the morning, I draw off the clear liquid, and you can use that for breakfast juice. And then you heat up the tomato again. And by that time, you've gotten rid of a lot of the liquid, and you can go on towards making your salsa. And another idea that I have is to, rather than trying to make a tomato paste or a thick tomato sauce for your pasta, boil your tomatoes up. I leave the skins on for more nutrition, mm-hmm. and I bring it to a boil, and then I put in my dry pasta. And you can calculate the amount of pasta that you want to have it end up be the just the right al dente, and then you can throw on some cheese on top and melt it in. And I've been using powdered chipotle pepper lately, and I just love the combination, and it works out for a nice dish.
Wow, that sounds great. And the chipotle would give it a nice smoky, spicy flavor.
And it is nice to keep those skins on for the nutritional value, so that's a great tip.
You know, one of the things that my mother always did with tomatoes was she would cut them in half and then broil them a little bit just to cook them slightly, and then she would mix breadcrumbs and fresh basil and a really nice, sharp hard cheese like Romano or something like that.
As a matter of fact, I'm doing that in 2 days at the Milwaukee Public Market for a private group. We just did their menu. That's a tomato provincial, I call it.
They're so good
and so easy. You know, it just takes a second. And that's a nice thing to use those larger tomatoes for, because sometimes you those large tomatoes, you're not quite sure what to do with them. And that's just a really great, and it gives such nice color to the dish.
Right.
You know? So really easy, and as you said, something that's just tasty.
You also have a fresh tomato ragu with capers and lemon on your site. Tell us about that dish.
Well, that is actually one of the dishes that my husband and I used to have when we had the restaurant for a quick lunch, because when you have a restaurant, you think you have all the time in the world, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, serving time. So this was a dish that I actually created for us, and then we started doing it in the restaurant. I use little small tomatoes, and up here I'm so fortunate to get just such a variety of tomatoes. There's one called a chocolate pearl that is a little, looks like a just your little red tomato, like a pear tomato, but it's brownish colored, and they call it a chocolate pearl. Mm-hmm. I get three or four colors of different tomatoes like that, put them in just into my pot with a little white wine, and I put whole lemon pieces in there, cut in half, and capers, and sometimes I'll throw a couple of sprigs of fresh rosemary in it. And in about 30 minutes, you just kind of reduce that, as it says, to a ragu. I take out those little lemon slices, and you've got lemon, tomato, a little bit of caper, and that white wine that actually reduced into making it into a sauce. And I just throw it on pasta, and as you said, use a nice hard cheese over it. We have so many lovely Wisconsin hard cheeses to choose from. And it's, you know, a quick, very nutritious meal to make. And you could do it with other tomatoes. I really like using those small tomatoes for this particular recipe because they have less water content. So it really makes a nice ragu.
There's a lot more to talk about with Chef Terry Milligan about cooking with late summer veggies. What questions do you have? Do you have a plethora of tomatoes, eggplants, zucchinis, or another vegetable that you're just kind of at a loss for how to use it? We'd love to hear from you, Terry. We'd love to give you some suggestions. And we'd also love to hear your recipes if you'd like to share as well. You can call 1-800-642-1234. We'd love to hear from you right after this short break. Stay with us. I hope you'll stay tuned because at 11:45, grilling guru Mad Dog will be here to talk about Labor Day and tailgate grilling ideas. But right now, we are talking with Chef Terry Milligan about what to do with all of those great late summer vegetables. And Terry, we had a question on Facebook. Andrea asks, do you have any great ideas for yellow summer squash?
Well, actually, I do. I have a recipe on the site that is I made with zucchini, but the yellow squash works just as well, and it's zucchini or yellow squash fritters. And what I do is grate the squash. I actually use a food processor usually because I was making it for the restaurant a lot of times and had to make a big batch. But you combine it with Japanese breadcrumbs, panko, mm-hmm. a little bit of cheese, eggs, and some fresh herbs of your choice. I really like sage and mint with this. And you make little bitty fritters. You coat them again in a little Japanese breadcrumbs and just do a little sauté on them. I usually pop them in the oven to heat them all the way through. And I make a little mayonnaise with lemon and herbs. And you've got a pretty little first course, or it actually could be a great summer luncheon or light dinner with a salad. And it's something a little more unusual than just using it for zucchini bread or in a little stir fry. Another thing I like to do is just roast them very thin. I slice them very thinly, toss them in olive oil, roast them single layer in a pan in about a 375 oven. And then after they're just getting a little brown, I do toss them in pasta with a little bit of lemon olive oil, fresh herbs, fresh basil. Throw in a couple of those tomatoes that you still have, and you've got another nice light meal for yourself.
Last night I chopped up a zucchini and a fresh onion from the market, tossed it with some olive oil and lemon juice, salt and pepper, and sumac, powdered sumac, and roasted them for about 30 minutes, and it was a really nice side dish.
Yeah, roasting vegetables is just a great way to bring out flavor with the summer bounties that we have.
And we also had a question on Facebook from Kim wondering about what to do with her patty pan squash because she has tons of them. Now, we talked about yellow squash and zucchini. They're pretty interchangeable, right?
Yes, they are.
And what about patty pans? Those are, for people that might not be familiar with them, they look like little flying saucers, kind of.
Yeah, like little dumplings.
Yeah.
And they are pretty to just steam. I usually steam them. You can, depending on the size, you might want to slice them in half, but usually they're small enough that you can just steam them in one of those little steamers and toss them, again, with a little olive oil, fresh herbs, maybe a little grated cheese on top. I used to always use these as a side when I could because they were pretty and they were unusual. Not a lot of people get to see the little patty pans. But you could also toss them with in a salad, like a quinoa salad, something like that. You could either steam them or, as we were talking, roast them, slice them in half and roast them in the oven just for a little while to get a little flavor and cook them through so they're still al dente. And you can toss them in pasta or a little different. You do the quinoa or farro salad, any of those interesting grains that are out there.
And patty pans, actually, because they are usually pretty small and they hold together, you can grill them on a skewer really easily.
Grill them. Mm-hmm. Those are great grilled. And you could make them into little shish kebabs if you want to make sure you don't lose them in the grate.
Exactly.
Put a little skewer on there so you don't lose them.
Now, people tend to feel strongly one way or the other about eggplant. I happen to like eggplant. But that's another one that late summer is often you're getting way more eggplants than you know what to do with. What do you like to do with eggplant?
Well, that's another one that I do grill, and there's so many different eggplants now. You know, it used to be that you just had these large eggplants. You know, now there are these very unusual, very beautiful, varied colored eggplant, and those smaller, firmer ones are really nice. Again, like a Japanese eggplant, which is skinnier, about 3 inches in diameter, a little longer. You can slice those just in half, brush them with oil, and put them straight on the grill. And you have a really, I think that people who don't think they might like eggplant might find that it's pretty darn good when you put it on the grill like that.
Yeah, I think it's often those huge, really deep purple ones that people aren't wild about the texture if they have a problem with it.
Yeah, but I like to make, with your tomatoes, you can make a ratatouille, which is a mixture of the zucchini. You get all of them involved.
Exactly.
You get the zucchini, the eggplant, and your tomatoes. And really, it is a ragu, an Italian type of a ragu. But when you blend it in, the eggplant really gives it a bit more of a meaty texture. So especially for vegetarians, that's kind of a nice thing that you get some chew out of, you know, the entree. But I love to make ratatouille, and you can serve that either alone. You could freeze the ratatouille as well if you wanted to.
And speaking of using those other great vegetables, Stella in Sturgeon Bay would like to go back to tomatoes, and I don't blame her. Hi, Stella.
Hi. We used to make a tomato juice, I'm sorry, and it was always kind of bitter.
Mm-hmm.
Because we would cook up the seeds and the skins with it and grind them up. But we discovered last summer a wonderful way to make an incredibly sweet tomato juice that is just absolutely delicious to drink straight or to use as a stock in soups or for any kind of cooking where you want a wonderful sweet tomato flavor. Mm-hmm. What we do is we oven roast the tomatoes just until they caramelize because we're not looking to reduce the liquid. We're just looking to get that caramelized flavor. And then we very coarsely chop them in the food in a blender or a food processor. And then we run them through a wonderful food mill that we discovered. And I'm going to give you the brand name of it because it's just so much better than any other food mill we've had. It's an OXO, O-X-O food mill that has three different size screens. We put in the finest screen, and then we just run the chopped oven-roasted tomatoes through the screen, through the finest screen, and then can in a hot water bath the resulting juice.
And it's sweeter then because of the roasting.
It's sweeter because of the roasting, and also because the seeds and the skins are not chopped up and are not not included.
That sounds delicious, Stella. Have you done tomato juice also, Terry?
I have, and you know, juicing of any of these summer things is just a great thing to do, and so many more people are juicing, and you can get some of this equipment for a lot less money than it used to be. I'm a true advocate of doing anything with the juicing, be it tomatoes or cucumbers that you might have in the garden. You can drink your Bounty as well as eat it in an entree.
Well, and you just mentioned cucumbers, and you actually have a recipe for cucumber soup, which I don't think most of us think of cucumbers as, you can throw it in a salad, but, it's kind of a one-trick pony. But tell us about this soup that you have.
Oh, this is one of my absolute favorite soups. It was always popular at the restaurant. It's a cucumber soup, but it also has coconut milk in it and avocado. So the avocado gives it more of a richness and a creaminess. And then it has some fresh mint, and the trick is a little green curry. And that green curry gives it a little snap, but not, you've got to be careful when you're using it. You don't want to go too snappy. But it's a delicious, delicious soup. And then I like to garnish it with a little toasted raw coconut, not the stuff that you would put on a cake, but go to an organic food store, and you can usually get these nice flakes that are more like a shaved coconut, and you put a few pieces of that on top. And what's nice about that soup is, because it's chilled, you can make that a day or two ahead of time and have it ready for your guests.
And on a day like this with really hot, humid conditions, I think, through most of the state, that sounds especially refreshing.
And I make that. You can do it in a food processor, but if you happen to be lucky enough to have one of those terrific blenders like a Vitamix or a Blendtec, you can make that in a snap.
Sounds great. We are talking with Chef Terry Milligan. She is a culinary instructor and writer and the former owner and executive chef of the Inn at Christopher's in Sister Bay. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. We'd love to have you join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you have a lot of a particular vegetable or fruit that you'd like some advice on using in some interesting ways, Chef Terry would be happy to help with that. And we'd love to hear how you use all this late summer bounty as well. Now, one of the vegetables that's also very prolific at this time of year is green beans.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with green beans?
Well, with the green beans, one of the nicest things you can do to keep them for the rest of the year is actually to freeze them, but to make them, you want to blanch them very quickly before you freeze them. And if people aren't familiar with the blanching concept, what you basically do is, pick your beans, wash them, take off any little ends. Then you're going to put them in just boiling water for just a minute or two. Then it goes right into an ice bath, and that stops the cooking. Then you're ready to freeze them, and I just freeze them in Ziploc bags. And because you're doing that blanching, what it does is it helps stop the growth of microorganisms and slows down the spoilage on food and keeps that green or yellow bean color in your produce item. And then you've got them for the winter.
And as you were saying earlier with the ratatouille being a way to use up a bunch of different things, you can also saute beans with tomatoes and basil and some garlic, and it's a great
side. I'm a German background, actually. I might be Milligan. My maiden name is Reitz, R-E-I-T-Z. So I'm German, and my mother always made fresh green beans with a little bit of bacon and some sauteed onions. And it was just terrific. And in fact, we had them a couple of nights ago because I got a whole bunch of green beans from one of our local farm vendors up here.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Anything with bacon, I'm a fan.
Yeah, it's like just a little bit.
You mentioned pesto earlier, and that pesto doesn't have to just be with basil and the usual traditional color. Ingredients. Mm-hmm. Nancy commented on our Facebook page that she loves pesto with kale and pine nuts. She says, yum.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and especially some of this kale that is more the baby kale, a little more tender leaf. One of my favorite salads is a raw kale salad. And there's lots of recipes on the internet, but it's so easy. I just put lemon juice and olive oil on it, some toasted breadcrumbs tossed in. I let it actually rest for about 10 minutes to soak in the vinaigrette, and then I just pop it on a plate with a little bit of shredded Parmesan cheese, and it's extremely healthy. Andy Weil has a great recipe on his website for that.
We had an email from Elizabeth asking, Terry, if you're familiar with the vegetable tian, T-I-A-N. She says many variations of it, but most layers summer vegetables like zucchini or other summer squashes, tomatoes, and eggplant with sauteed onions and toasted breadcrumbs roasted in a hot oven. And she says the roasting really caramelizes the vegetables and they develop such a great intense flavor.
Mm-hmm. They do. The roasting is just a great... an easy thing that people can do. When you roast them, though, you do want to make sure you put them on even layers. And if you have vegetables that are really vary in the type, such as you have an eggplant and then you've got zucchini, the zucchini is going to go roast much quicker than an eggplant. So kind of use your head a little bit on doing different pans of the roasted vegetables because some are going to take a little longer than others.
And one of the things, I mean, it's a very simple little thing, but instead of firing up the big oven, especially on a hot day, I've been doing just enough for one meal and doing it in the little toaster oven in a little roasting pan.
Sure, you can do that as well. Mm-hmm. And go outside and roast.
There you go.
Get that going.
Now, we've been talking a lot about different vegetables, but this is also a big time of year for fruit as well. And you're a big fan of cherries.
Well, you have to be if you live in Door County. We're the fourth largest cherry producer in the country, so we'd like to say we're number one, but we're just a little peninsula, so 99% of all the cherries for Wisconsin come from our little peninsula. But we do a darn good job, and this was a record year for our cherries this year, which is great because last year we had a bad year with a frost that did away with some of our cherries, and this year they're just cherries everywhere.
And what do you love to do with them?
Well, I do. I do everything from putting cherry juice in a Door County cherry in a glass of champagne, which I call a Door County Kir. So instead of a raspberry liqueur, we'll use cherry juice, about one-third cherry juice and two-thirds champagne. That's my absolute favorite thing to do with them. But I also, of course, make pies. On my website is our bumbleberry pie. Bumbleberry is just a term of various berries, and even though cherries aren't a berry, here in Door County, I always make my pie, bumbleberry pie, with raspberries, blueberries, blackberries, and then cherries. So you have a bumble of different flavors in there.
Do you know where that name comes from?
I thought that it was just somebody saying, you know, it's a bumble of things, a lot of things, but together.
Well, and I mean, cherries, obviously, you know, we think of sweet cherries, but there are also tart cherries.
Right. Well, our cherries up here are mainly tart cherries, though there are some sweet cherries up here, but the majority are tart. And the majority also, because it's a short season, you can't go through all those cherries just like you can't go through all the tomatoes in your garden. We end up freezing a lot of them for commercial use so they can be used year-round. But they're great in a sour cherry sauce with a duck, a chicken, a pork roast, all terrific things.
Well, and on your website, and again, that's Chef Terry Milligan. It's chef and then TerryMilligan.com. You have a cherry and rosemary focaccia bread. Tell us about that.
I did. I just put that on my site last week. This is a very interesting bread. Some focaccia is very chewy. This is a very delicate focaccia, so I actually bake it in a tart pan. It's a softer focaccia. It has rosemary in it, the Door County cherries, but you could use a Bing cherry, too. It doesn't have to be a sour cherry. It could be a sweet cherry. Just make sure you take the pits out, of course. And I do a mixture of sugar and salt on top of it, so it gets a sweet and savory kind of crust on top. It's a great focaccia to have with a cheese plate. So get some very nice Wisconsin cheeses, a couple of slices of the focaccia bread, and you've got a very interesting platter for your guests.
We're talking with Chef Terry Milligan up until 11:45. So if you have a question about late summer vegetables, we'd love to have you call now. That's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Judith Sears Poisson sitting in for Larry Mueller. And, you know, Terry, you also have a wonderful shortcake recipe.
Oh, yes.
On the site to use really any kind of fruit.
Any fruit. And it's just a basic shortcake. Sometimes I actually put basil into the shortcake or mint, just about a tablespoon to give the shortcake a little more of a summer flavor. You've got those herbs and you might as well use them up. And people don't think about using herbs like that in desserts. And you really can do that. And that's another thing to do with tomatoes. If you've got a lot of them, you can make tomato sorbet, which is delicious. As a savory sorbet. But these shortcakes are really easy to make, very similar to a scone-type recipe. And then whatever types of fruits you have, it could be a stone fruit that are in season right now, like a peach or a plum or a berry or a cherry.
Have you done much roasting or grilling of things like nectarines and other stone fruits? For some reason, that's been sounding really good to me, but I've never tried it, and so I'm a little intimidated.
Well, I don't think you have to be, but you know, the best thing to do with the roasting of the nectarines or the plums or the peaches is cut them in half or quarters. You don't want to get them too small because they are going to, with the water content in those fruits, you are going to lose a little of the density when you roast them. I like to brush them with a little balsamic vinegar, a really good balsamic vinegar, and you get a little kind of a sugary glaze on them while you're grilling them. But they don't take real long to grill, so indirect heat, if you're doing it outside, works the best so you don't get the flame going right up on the fruit.
Especially because there's so much sugar in them, I'm guessing that they could actually burn pretty easily.
They can burn pretty quickly, but they don't take very long either because it's not like a meat that you're trying to cook through. You're just trying to get some caramelization of the natural sugars and then adding a little of that balsamic. They're great. Throw those grilled peaches or nectarines in with some arugula lettuce and a little bit of olive oil and balsamic vinegar, and you've got a really interesting salad.
It sounds like you really like mixing kind of unexpected flavors. So something that's really peppery, like arugula, mixing it with a really sweet, mellow, roasted stone mm-hmm. fruit. What is it about those combinations that really appeal to you?
Well, I think it kind of jolts the senses a little bit. You know, you get, and just like the sugar and the salt on a focaccia, you get a little yin and yang, you know. So I like people to think about the food and what they're eating. I think that's why we were so successful at Vienna Christopher's, that we always tried to come up with things that would surprise our guests.
And what about greens? Greens are something that, you know, if you were able to put some new seeds in for a second planting, we might be getting a whole new crop of greens coming up. What are some of your favorite greens and what do you like to do with them?
Well, one is kale. I mean, I think kale is not only so nutritious, but it's extremely versatile. You can do something, we've talked about roasting, you can make kale chips, and I did those with zucchini the other day, too. I made zucchini chips, where I just got my little slicer and sliced them very thin, tossed them in some lemon olive oil, put them in a low oven, about a 200-degree oven, single layer on parchment paper, and just roasted them until they got crisp. You eat them all in like one handful because they're so good. But it's a way to maybe get kids, you know, to start eating something that, not a potato chip, but a vegetable chip. But I love the kale chips. I love the kale salad. The lettuces, of course, are always delicious. And there's so many different radishes now that you can use. You know, it used to be just the red radish, and now you've got, you know, watermelon radishes. I just did an interview with a young woman up here who has a big farm, and she had radishes that weren't, tree radish, I think she called them, and they looked like a snap pea almost.
Really?
But they were growing above the ground, and they were simply delicious, just right off the vine.
Wow, and then there are the daikon radishes, the long, white,
yes,
icicle kind of radishes, too. Do you like to cook with radishes in addition to just eating them raw?
Yes, and you know, that's another thing that's becoming in vogue. If you read a lot of these cooking magazines, you'll see a lot of sautéed radish, quick sauté radish. And again, that's when you're talking about different flavors. You throw a radish in with a bean, and you get a little snappy flavor along with the bean. So and you can slice them very thin with all these little gadgets you can buy now that are really reasonable for the home cook to get.
We have Penny in Wisconsin Rapids on the line, so let's go there. Hi, Penny.
Hi. I'm just confused when it comes to adding herbs to something I'm making. When you go to a restaurant, they make things taste so wonderful and interesting, and I go home and I'm like, I don't really know how to really make something interesting. You know, I have a lot of spices and herbs, but I don't really know what to do with herbs.
So,
well, you know, the best thing just to remember with fresh herbs is you always want to put them in at the end. You never want to start cooking with the fresh herbs and, you know, then 30 minutes later you're done with the recipe, because those fresh herbs lose their flavor right away. So us folks who have restaurants always throw those fresh things in right at the end. The other thing you want to make sure is remember that dried herbs, you're going to take about one-third what you do use for fresh. So if you needed a tablespoon of fresh herbs, you'd only use a teaspoon of dried herbs. So you don't want to over-herb if you're using dried. And one thing I wanted to really get in before we were done with this interview was just to say about fresh herbs and how to preserve them in the summer, from summer to winter. What I have found is freezing the herbs in olive oil in trays, little ice cube trays, is a great way to preserve the flavor of the herb. And you can just throw that olive oil cube in your pan and you get olive oil and herb at the same time.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
Mm-hmm. Everybody has a lot of herbs, but, you know, it's hard when you do go to a restaurant, then you go home and you try to reproduce things. But, you know, just remember when they're fresh, they cook quick, so you don't want to have those into something that's similar. If it's a soup, you put those fresh herbs right in at the end so you keep that flavor.
That sounds wonderful. Thanks for that call, Penny. And in just a minute or so we have left, Terry, why don't you give us your website again and remind us what we'll find there?
Well, my website is chefterrymilligan.com, and as you said, it's TerriMilligan. People can sign up on my website if they'd like to get periodic updates from me. I don't share the list with anybody, but I always send an email out when I'm going to be on a show or if I'm going to be doing a cooking class. And it also lists all my cooking classes. So right now it's listing, I have a class coming up next on September 8th at the Milwaukee Public Market on Argentinian cooking. Mm. And then on October 14th, we're doing a Harvest Moon class where we're making a lot of things with butternut squash, one of my favorite things, and doing a traditional French apple tatin.
Oh.
And those are all hands-on classes. So you can find out where I'm going to be, where I'm teaching, find out little tips. Just I try to make it as useful as possible for the home cook.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Chef Terry Milligan, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Oh, thank you, and thanks for letting me be on.
Of course. Terry is a culinary instructor and writer, as well as the former owner and executive chef of the Inn at Christopher's in Sister Bay. Always great when she can spend some time with us. And coming up next, we are going to continue a mouth-watering conversation. We're going to keep you salivating, because coming up next is grilling with Mad Dog. His buddy Merrill is a little under the weather, so Mad Dog is going to be flying solo to talk about Labor Day and tailgate grilling ideas. So stay tuned right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.